So if you can open your Bibles to Philippians chapter 2 and verse 17, and the title of this message is A Life Poured Out. In 2012, something big happened in 2012. Does anybody remember what big thing happened in 2012? It was the year that Tim Hortons changed its cup sizes. And in that year, what happened was Tim Hortons changed from the medium became the small and the large became the medium because they started to put Tim Hortons in the United States of America, and our cups had to line up with the Americans who like everything bigger. And so the Canadians thought, we better do this here. And remember, it was a big conspiracy because we all knew what was going to happen. It surely did happen. And this is that as they changed those cup sizes, what was happening in Canada is people who ordered a medium still went to Tim Hortons and ordered a medium because I don't want a small, but they just couldn't say small. So they still got the medium now before they were used to drinking the medium, which is now the small. And so to the chagrin of many husbands and many families, there was a tray, many people in the families, there was a tray in the car, the console, which always had about this much coffee in the bottom of these cups. And I remember always, pop the lid off, dump out the rest of the coffee because, you get the medium, you don't really want the medium, you really wanted a small. And now I'm dumping coffee, I'm pouring it out. And it just felt like such a waste. Well, here today, we're talking about a life poured out. And I just want you to have that imagery because, when you take something that's as valuable as coffee, many people think global warming is because of CO2. I think it was extra caffeine in 2012. I think all that, the earth just like got too hot and worked up over all that caffeine being dumped out. But when you think about something valuable being dumped out, that symbolic symbol of dumping something into the ground, it right away strikes your mind, what a waste. How many of you hate wasting food in general, right? It's like, the cottage or the cheese or the cream cheese, or not the cream cheese, the sour cream, a little green on top. You scrape that. No, I won't go that far. But cheese, you can actually cut the mold off cheese. You can do that and you still eat it. And others would be like, turn your nose up. No, that's going in the garbage. But there's this understanding where something's being poured out, it feels like it's a waste. When the world looks at many Christians, and they see the way Christians pour out their life, pour out their finances, pour out their love and their time into something, they look at it and they're just like, it seems like a waste to them. It seems like a waste because you're taking your resources, your time and your effort, and you're putting it out into something that is not self. So for many people, that seems like a waste. Well, Paul today is teaching us about a life poured out. We're actually going to be looking at three characters. I love Philippians because it talks about unity and how unity is this place of joy, how there's supposed to be joy in the church, and there only can be joy where there's unity. And then he gives all the precepts, but you can't really follow a precept without getting an example. And so we get the example to go with the precept. The precept helps your mind to understand why we should do what we should do, but then we're given the example, and the example is Jesus. But then on top of the example of Jesus, we're also given the example of Paul. And then we're given the example of Timothy. And then we're given the example of Epaphroditus. And he does this in such amazing way. And this particular verse oftentimes gets foreshadowed or shadowed over or covered over because it's preceded by such an amazing verse. Do all things without complaining and disputing, that you may become blameless and harmless, children of God without fault in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation among whom you shine as lights in the world, holding fast the word of life so that I may rejoice in the day of Christ that I have not run in vain or labored in vain. And as you heard that 2 weeks ago, you went home and you're like, that sermon on complaining, that was a great message. I'm not going to complain. And then we caught our spouse complaining, or you caught a family member. You heard the pastor on Sunday, quit your complaining. Or you caught yourself complaining and you're like, I'm not going to be that person that complains. And some of you have made big changes in your life from that sermon 2 weeks ago because you said that this is important. The Bible says it. I'm going to live it. However, this verse today is very important and can get kind of overshadowed by this not complaining scripture and holding fast the word of life and all of this, these amazing words. And then we get to this one today, and sometimes we just plain out forget that it's here. In fact, I have a little confession. I almost didn't preach these verses. I appended them to my last sermon and made a short mention. And then I thought, now I'm going on to talk about Timothy and Epaphroditus. But Paul sets himself out here as an example. And he says, yes, in verse 17, chapter 2, yes, and if I am being poured out as a drink offering on the sacrifice and service of your faith, I am glad and rejoice with you all. For the same reason, you also be glad and rejoice with me. And there it is. Paul gives himself as an example of a life poured out as a drink offering. And the reason why it doesn't stand out to us is for many of us, you know, this concept of drink offering is quite Levitical. It's foreign. You're like, I don't even know what the word Levitical means because, you know, some of you maybe have tried to read through your Bible and you read Genesis and you read Exodus and then you're like, okay, you get to Leviticus and you're like, okay, we'll try this again next year. You know, I did that for many years. I got to know Genesis and Exodus so well because I would start and I'd like, I'm going to read through the Bible. You know, I'm a pastor. I should be able to do this. I know that sounds bad. I'm going to read through the Bible in my first couple of years of ministry. I'm going to get through the whole Bible. I mean, I could memorize all of James, but tell you, reading through the Bible was a challenge, especially back in the day when there's no audio books and you're reading challenged. I just have a hard time reading. And so I would get through Genesis and Exodus and then I'd start again. And those two captivated me. But I tell you, Leviticus, I couldn't do it. And then Numbers, oh my goodness, no. Genesis, Exodus, and then Leviticus, Numbers, I would just lose me. And so I got to memorize practically Genesis and Exodus. But I tell you, Leviticus is powerful. As you get to know, I hope that many of you who are doing the Bible reading plan with us are doing the project, Bible recap with us, Tara Lee Cobble, because she helps you understand Leviticus. She helps you understand Numbers and understand the importance of what God is showing us through these sacrifices and through all of the different furniture and the tabernacle and the way the camp was laid out. All of this had symbolic and deep meaning to show people how far they were from God and how holy our God was. You know, we sang it this morning, holy, holy, holy. And as I'm singing it, the words of Leviticus are coming to me as I imagine the glory of God over top of the tabernacle and how people couldn't even enter into that room because they would be struck dead because the presence of God was in that place. Only Aaron, the high priest, could go in and only once a year. Holy, 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 how altogether lovely and beautiful and powerful our God is, different than anything else that exists. Our God is holy. And so as you read through Leviticus, you come across these passages like a drink offering, which is poured out. It's poured out. It's poured out onto the altar, and then it steams up and it rises up before God in heaven. And so we come across passages such as Numbers 15:10, which says, you shall bring as a drink offering half a hin, or about 2 liters of wine as an offering made by fire, sweet smelling aroma to God, to the Lord. And you take this good wine and you pour it on the altar and it goes up to heaven. And some of you in your minds, like, that's perfectly good wine. Why would you waste that? You know, I was talking to Ronnie Fast on the way up. I've been picking him up since he broke that leg. And so I picked him up for church and I was going through this and he's like, yeah, he says, that's a good purpose for wine. I hate wine. I'm like, I concur. I've tried several times to like it. I just can't like it. And so, yeah, I'd pour out the wine, but maybe change the imagery to pouring out, you know, Organica pour over coffee that's freshly ground beans, if that works better for you, okay? And, you know, pour that out. That's like something valuable here. And it's just dumped on the altar and it steams up. Does God drink coffee or wine? No, it was symbolic. And God says it was a sweet-smelling aroma because in God's perspective, from his view, when we offer something to him and it comes up before him and we've sacrificed, it's saying to God, God, we love you. We respect you, we trust you, we give to you because you've given to us, and we trust that you will provide for our needs. And as an act of worship, I will give you something valuable to pour out and trust that, God, this is an acceptable sacrifice for you. And there's more to this picture in that when we get to the New Testament, we hear words like this. Yes, Paul says, if I am being poured out as a drink offering on the sacrifice and service of your faith, I am glad and rejoice with you all. For the same reason, you also be glad and rejoice with me. You see, the idea was that it was wasted as far as personal uses, right? It's being wasted as far as your personal use. It's not being used on you. You can no longer consume it, but it is spent as a sacrifice that is well-pleasing to God instead. And it's way of saying that God, all of me for all of you, I pour my life out for you. And under the new covenant, here's the beautiful thing. You don't have to pour out your coffee, your wine, whatever's valuable in the sense of a liquid offering to God. You don't need to do that. Instead, your life is a offering to God and it is poured out. But the reason you can in the new covenant do this, why didn't they do it in the old covenant, is because your life was not sanctified in the way that the new covenant you enter through Jesus Christ. As Hebrews chapter 9 tells us in verse 12, that not without the blood of goats and calves, but with his own blood, he entered the most holy place once and for all, having obtained eternal redemption. And so Jesus enters into the holiest of all with his own blood. You are the redeemed, and you are, when God sees you, your life is pure, your life is acceptable, and now you pour your life back out to him. Your life is his. You've been bought with a price, and now you pour your life out before him. You are living sacrifices, holy, acceptable to him. We are to offer ourselves to him in that way. You look at this verse and you say, well, is this verse really for us? I mean, Paul's saying, yes, if I am being poured out as a drink offering, meaning Paul is being poured out as a drink offering. He's not talking about the Philippians being poured out as a drink offering. He's just saying, celebrate the fact that I'm being poured out. But Paul also, you have to understand, he is our example. He tells us in Philippians 4:9, the things that you learned and received and heard and saw in me, in Paul, the things that you observed in my life, these do, and the God of peace will be with you. And so he gives us his life as an example, and he tells us that we are to be poured out for God. And so how are we to be pouring out our lives? Here's how you pour out your lives. You pour your life out joyfully, graciously, and fully. And so those are your points if you're a note taker. Joyfully, you pour out your lives. Now, it says, if my life is being poured out as a sacrifice and the sacrifice in service of your faith, and you think about sacrifice, and immediately what does not come to your mind when you think of sacrifice is joy. Sacrifice sounds like pain, doesn't it? Sacrifice sounds difficult. It sounds like when you're sacrificing, you're giving something up that you wanted for yourself. You're like, I wanted that wine, or I wanted that cup of coffee. Right? I wanted whatever it is. But it's when it's sacrificed, it's no longer being used for you. It's wasted on you, but given to another. And so you look at it and you say, well, joy and sacrifice don't seem to go together. And yet this is exactly what Paul's telling us when he says, if I'm being poured out as a drink offering on the sacrifice and service of your faith, I am glad. And not only that, I rejoice with you all. So he's using the same Greek word here twice, and the word is just saying, I'm glad, and he says, and I'm glad with, is really what it's saying. So he's just doubly glad because individually he is glad, and we are to be glad when we pour out our life, but then corporately, we are to be glad when we see the effects of our life being poured out on others. There's this corporate sense in which there's this joy in gathering together and seeing the fruit of our lives being poured out into the lives of others, and others' lives being poured out into our lives and to those that we're reaching out to. And there's this accumulation of joy that is just abundant in lives being poured out for the purpose of God. You know, some people are not happy about their lives being poured out. You know, you maybe have met people, maybe you've been that person where you're just an absolute grump about, I've done that, where I've served and I lost all the blessing in serving because I was an absolute grump about it. And I was just miserable. And it could have been a joyous event. Instead, I turned it into, you know, just a big burden because I didn't serve with the right attitude. And, you know, you see this, that they're so important that we are called to be cheerful givers. That's how God has called us to give and to be poured out, to be cheerful in this. But so many times instead, we're like the older brother in the prodigal son story, aren't we? Where we see the prodigal son goes out, the younger brother goes out, he takes his dad's inheritance, he spends it all, he's partying, he's just living it up, he's having all this fun, and you're just faithfully at home being the good child, doing all the things that you should do, you're pouring your life out for the father, you're doing all the right things, and then that ungrateful son comes back and he's all sorry, and then dad, you know, he should have kicked him to the curb, but instead he throws him a feast, an older brother is just miserable. You mean I've served you all of these years and I've done all of this stuff and you're throwing that kid a party? And he doesn't realize that there should have been joy in being with the father. He never had to leave the household. He never had to experience the heartbreak of realizing that this world cannot fulfill all of those desires. He should have been a joyful son, realizing that he's in the presence of the Father. And this is what we are called to do as believers, as our lives are being poured out, that we do so joyfully. It was Jim Elliot who famously wrote these words before he was killed in Ecuador by a remote tribe who had never heard or never actually been reached out to by civilization at all. But they were reaching this tribe with the gospel, and the remote tribe, they threw a spear at him and they killed him and Nate Saint and others of their friends, and they killed them. Before he died, the day before he died, he wrote these words in his journal. He is no fool who gives what he cannot keep to gain what he cannot lose. He threw his life away. Some people would say, what a waste. Young man, so much potential. Why would he take that risk? Because he is no fool who gives what he cannot keep to gain what he cannot lose. So joyfully poured out. Graciously poured out is the second part. Graciously, you see, our meager offerings, whatever we have to bring, is just meager. It's just so small in the big picture, but yet it is multiplied by the grace of God. We have to understand this, because if you don't understand this, then you have the attitude of, oh, what do I have to offer? It's like, yeah, you know what? Not a whole lot. You know, in the big picture of things, what do you have to offer? You know, kind of like the pathetic guy at the airport, right, Rich? You know, he comes up to us and we're all excited about what we got to do and be a part of. And he's like, you know, oh yeah, you know, because he's another guy that was a white guy. You see a white guy in the Philippines. It's like, hey, white person. You run up to him, talk to him, see what they're doing here, right? And so he asked us, and we're like, well, we're feeding children and, you know, bringing wheelchairs, helping people in poverty and bringing the gospel of Jesus Christ. This is what we're doing. And we were all excited about it. And he's like, well, why are you doing that? And we're like, oh, okay. And he says, well, give you an example. There's three children and they're starving. And he says, now if you feed them, they will each have three more children. Now you will have nine hungry children. And we're like, we are following it through to its conclusion. So you're saying let them die? That's exactly what he was saying. You know, what an attitude to have. And I said to him, I said, you know what? The Bible says that the poor will always be with you. And so we know that's a fact. Yes, you know that. Yes, we'll give them the opportunity to live, and they might have nine hungry children. Now we have to feed nine hungry children. That's great. More opportunity to serve more people in need. That's fine by me. But the guy was like, "Who said that word?" I was like, "Said those words." I said, "Jesus said that. The poor will always be with you. We'll always have people that we can pour out to." But here's the thing that we as Christians know that the world cannot see, and that is that God is an abundant God who can graciously supply, and He's calling us to be His hands and feet. And I think that's what Rich answered. Like, we're His hands and feet. We're just going out there doing His work, and this is what God has called us to do. And then this poor little Filipino wife comes up to us and says, I'm so sorry, because she's married to this guy. And then she walks away and I'm like, oh, that poor lady. Oh, it's so sad. But this is how people think. They don't think graciously. They don't think about pouring out their life. They think small-minded. Like Jesus tried to expand the disciples' minds and understanding what God could do. Remember when there was the crowd and the disciples, their answer to the hungry crowd was like, oh, these people, they're starving and they got to get home and feed the kids. We got to get these people to go home. Send them home. That's their answer. And Jesus says, no, you feed them. They're like, what? How are we going to feed them? And it came down to, what do we have? Well, this boy, you know, he's got some loaves and fish. And Jesus miraculously multiplied that. And not only that, but there was an abundance. And it came back that there was more than what they started with. And so as you pour out your life, I want you to have an understanding of that principle that God can do exceedingly more than you can even imagine. You know, we think this way in regard to so many areas of our life. We think about our limitations. I'm so thankful my parents, what they did when we were kids. We went to hear a missionary speak one time at our church, in Jarvis, and it was Missionary Aviation Fellowship, I think it's called. And they pulled on our hearts. As little kids, we saw the pictures, and we were, you know, the slideshow was really touching, and we had worked really hard that summer. We had this money in our bank account, and when they said, you know, hey, can we, you know, can you support us? My sister and I looked at each other and both agreed, let's give all our money. And so we took all of our allowance, and we said to my parents, we want to give it all, you know, go to the bank, get our money, give it to this. This is what we want to do with our money that we worked hard for. And now, you know, a lot of responsible parents would say to their kids, listen, you might regret that later on. Like, why don't you give half of it, or, you know, maybe tithe, right? That sounds like the right thing to do. That sounds like kind of a, you know, a good way, you know, I mean, maybe even Dave Ramsey would say that. I don't know. Maybe. But here's the thing. I love what my parents did. No arguing. They just said, yeah, God's put that on your heart. You go ahead and do it. And I tell you, there was never a regret as a little kid giving your hundreds of dollars away, thinking, oh, I could have bought this or I could have bought that, because our heart was pulled at that time. And we have a God who can meet all of our needs according to his riches and glory. And so it wasn't, you know, in that sense, maybe every situation is different, you know, for different people or different things. But that to me as a kid touched me and has kind of defined how I think when I think of the fact that God graciously has poured out for me. And sometimes he calls us to abundantly and graciously pour out for others, and he will supply our needs according to his riches and glory. You know, a little plug for our Romans 8 memory project. How's your Romans 8 going? Some of you are not giving me eye contact. Why are you looking away? Huh? I'm only on verse 4, by the way. I'm on verse 4 because now here my reasoning. I'm learning another language while I'm memorizing it in that language. So I have to learn what those words mean and how to pronounce them as I'm saying them. And so that's my excuse. What's your excuse? So here's the thing. You might already be feeling like I'm failing at this. You're only, what is it, 8 weeks, 9 weeks into the year. So we're supposed to be at verse 9. We have a forgiveness, you know, of how many, because there's only 39 verses in 52 weeks, right? So you have enough room to keep going with this. I want to, once again, just kind of put that out there, a challenge for you. At youth night, we asked some of the young men who were in my small group. I sent the girls with Brandon. I was like, Brandon, you take the girls, I'll take the boys. And so I don't know how that went. Sorry, Brandon. But I took the boys and I asked them this question. I said, has God done something for you? Because we were talking about that scripture that we talked about a few weeks ago, where it says that that he who works in you, that he will bring it to completion, and that God has the power to do the work in you. And so I brought that passage up, said, have you ever done something where it's like, you know, you didn't think you could do it, but you took a step and you did it, and then God met you with his power? And Cohen, yep, he said, I got an example. He says, like that memory worksheet at the back, I grabbed that. He said, I didn't think I could do that. I am not good at that at all. And he's like, and then I started doing it. Now he's a few verses in. And something that he never thought he could do, but he took that step. So here's the thing. Thinking God graciously pouring out your life is just saying, you know what? God is capable of doing the thing I cannot do. My job is just to step out in obedience. You know, my job is to walk out with my 300 men and our lamps and our sword and meet an army of 10,000. Or how many, maybe it was 100,000, I forget that army size, or, you know, whatever the story is, my job is just to take a step of faith, to grab a few smooth stones from the river and bring my sling to meet the giant. My job is just to take that step of faith to say, God, you're going to have to meet me in this. You're going to have to show yourself faithful in this because I can't do this. And God will graciously pour out as you step out to minister, to share your faith. Maybe it's sharing your faith with a friend and you're just terrified because you don't want them to think you're a fool, and you might make a fool of yourself and you might not say the right things. And so now you're going to take that first step and you're just going to open up the conversation. I loved it on the ski lift on Monday. We were having different conversations, different chats with people. And one of the nieces is like, how do I start a conversation with people? Like, how do I even start it? I was like, well, here's an easy one on a ski lift. Have you been out much this year? There you go. There's a conversation. Where's mine going to lead to? They're going to ask me, and in return, I'm like, actually, I haven't. This is my first time out. I was just in the Philippines last week. And, you know, then I can talk about what we do, and from there, talk about the gospel. And so there was many opportunities to talk about what God has done in my life, just going up, you know, 10-minute ski lifts, one at a time, all day long. So 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 10 says, as each one has received a gift, minister it to one another as good stewards of the manifold grace of God. And so that's what we're doing. We're taking the gift that God has given to us, and we are ministering it to one another as good stewards of the manifold grace of God. And finally, we are fully poured out, joyfully, graciously, and fully. You see, drink offerings weren't like other offerings. The priest didn't do this. He didn't take the bottle of wine and say, okay, you know, don't want to pour this too quick, and then looked at the bottle and say, okay, there's still about half a bottle. You know, it's a half a hand. There's 2 liters. There's a liter for God and a liter for the priest. You know, here we go. No, God looked after the priests in other ways. They got the first fruits. They got the first fruits of the grapes. They can make their own wine. They can do their own thing. This wasn't for them. This was a drink offering. It is to be fully offered. There were some offerings, meat offerings, that the fat and some parts of the animal were to be burned. And then some of the meat was to be held back for the priest. They could eat that meat. But then there was the whole burnt offering, and it was all to be consumed by fire, and it was all to be taken and sent up to heaven, along with the drink offering, which is to be fully poured out. And that's this last point. Our lives are to be fully poured out for him. And you know, this is only possible as you joyfully and graciously pour out your lives. I tell you, you can't do this if you're not going to be joyful about it. Because how can you pour it all out if you're just sitting there thinking, oh man, I'm not going to have anything left for me. You know, if you have that attitude, or if you're having the attitude of, I don't know if there's going to be enough if I give everything to God in my life. If I give him too much, if I give him too much time, I don't know if I can get done what I need to do for me or spend time doing my stuff. And so if you want to be fully poured out, you have to joyfully and graciously be poured out. But there is a difference between being poured out and being burned out. I've seen many Christians burn out. Burnout comes when you're doing it not from a place of joy and not from a place of trusting God. When you put yourself in the position of, I am going to rescue and save people because that's my job, and wanting the attention for yourself. I tell you, if you do things in that way, you will burn out. And that is not a good place to be, where you just feel so, and in the end, you'll burn yourself out, and then people won't show enough gratitude for you. And then you'll be a bitter and mad and angry person because nobody appreciated you for all you did. And that's not what God is calling you to do. He's calling you to joyfully serve him, however it is that he is calling you to serve him, and to graciously do it as you're trusting that he will fill you to supply for you what needs need to be supplied for. You see, Paul knew, he had the proper perspective in regard to this life. You see, this life is just this tiny little thing. You know, it's like the end of one of these mic cords. Sorry, sound man. You know, it's just a tiny little piece. And we think we got to live and get all our living done in this little piece. And what we don't realize is that, you know, this is just the beginning of what could be, well, is probably eternity. It is eternity. It goes on and on forever. And yet we try to pack it all in that little tiny end. You know, Francis Chan gave that extension cord illustration. We try to pack it all in that tiny little end. But God has before us eternity, and we are called to understand that. Paul understood that. He wasn't a freeloading pastor like me that gets a paycheck from the church. He was a tent maker by trade. So he went and he worked and he provided for his own income, and then he preached the gospel free of charge. And because he did that, because he worked with tents, he got thinking about these tents. He got realizing that, you know what, I make tents, and guess what? These people, they go away for, you know, I won't see them for 5-10 years, but then that sun and the radiation from the sun and everything breaks down, it wears out, and guess what? Now they come back. It's either a repair or a replacement because tents wear out. Plus, tents are portable. And so Paul had this understanding of the fleeting nature of life, and he compared our lives to like a tent. right? And this is how we need to understand our time here, that we are here for a short time, and therefore our lives are to be fully poured out. Remember, it was Jesus who said, "He who wishes to save his life will lose it, but he who loses his life for my sake will find it." So we are to dedicate ourselves to him. Before we have communion, I want to close with this little poem by C.T. Studd. Wait, the name. He was a Harvard University student, and his father was very rich. And he was expected to inherit what his father had, very successful businessman. But he was in school, and Hudson Taylor shows up at his school and shares about his work in China, reaching the unreached groups in China, in the China Inland Mission. And his heart was so moved by these people who needed the gospel of Jesus Christ that him and six other students, they called them the Harvard Seven, got called to go on the mission field and go to China and to give up all of their educational ambitions at home and go and reach the lost for Jesus Christ. And he did this for many years. Eventually, his father died and left him with this vast inheritance. And he invested all of that in the kingdom, in China, in Africa, in India, and preaching the gospel around the world. Eventually, he got very sick and he came home. And then when he recovered, he went to Africa and he went to India and he preached the gospel. He gave his whole life away. And you think about this, and it's like some people would look at that. His own family looked at it and said, "What a waste. What potential." You know, this young man who was very intellectual, he had a great education. You know, he could have turned around and did something with that, but instead, and they have no understanding that he understood that he did do something with that. He gave it in such a way that it changed people's lives for eternity. And this is the little poem that he wrote towards the end of his life. He says, this is by C.T. Studd, "Two little lines I heard one day, traveling along life's busy way, bringing conviction to my heart and from my mind would not depart. Only one life, it will soon be passed. Only what's done for Christ will last. Only one life, yes, only one. Soon will its fleeting hours be done. And then in that day, my Lord, to meet and stand before his judgment seat. Only one life, it will soon be passed. Only what's done for Christ will last. Only one life, the still small voice gently pleads for a better choice, bidding these selfish aims to leave and to God's holy will to cleave. Only one life, it will soon be passed. Only what's done for Christ will last. Only one life, yes, only one. Now let me say, thy will be done. And when at last I hear the call, I know I'll say it was worth it all. Only one life, it will soon be passed. Only what's done for Christ will last." And then he added this final line, "And when I am dying, how happy I'll be if the lamp of my life has been burned out for thee." And so that was the story of his life.